Johnny Rollins on tenor sax, opening up on the great jazz classic Strode Road, with a trio of sidemen and a class by themselves. Tommy Flanagan on piano, Doug Watkins on bass, and Max Roach on drums. This is from Rollins' 1956 album, Saxophone Colossus. It's an accurate description, an apt description. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and today it's a setup for tomorrow, actually, when we return to the discussion of the Clinton Foundation, more of the shenanigans that our expert Charles Ortel has been digging into and revealing. But I thought I would concentrate on the role of media in this particular moment in time. And the reason we want to pay attention to it is that it's going to become more and more important, more and more significant in influencing public opinion. And it has already begun. The media have assigned themselves as flacks for Hillary so as to drum up sympathy and support. And we'll see how this affects where things go. As you know, in an extended and ongoing series, we have been cataloging the highly irregular and blatantly illegal practices of Bill and Hillary Clinton as the driving forces behind the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation, an international conglomerate of purported charities that have been exposed mostly as fronts for soliciting and collecting billions of dollars for various projects of questionable philanthropic purpose. The Clintons and their foundation now are at the center of intense and widening investigations, focusing on how the Clintons might have leveraged the high-level public offices that they have held and currently wish to hold in the case of Mrs. Clinton, to help major, quote, donors, unquote, to the foundation gain special access to and favors from the international world of business and government. On a parallel track, several governments that generously donated to Clinton, the Clinton Foundation humanitarian efforts, are questioning not only the integrity of those programs, but where the money went. And we see also something else developing. These probes that have already been launched, others that are pending, and still others that are being demanded by Republican congressional leaders, we have Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign in full defense mode. And here is where we are going today, because here she derives a certain level of comfort. There's a certain level of safety she's enjoying by a liberal media that already has taken on the assignment of flak duty. Their duty is to help blunt criticisms of the presidential hopeful by ever so deftly shifting the focus of the story. Now, what do I mean? Well, we did discuss some time ago how these elections are run, and the focus in terms of the media, yeah, they'll tell you, well, they're interested in candidate A's position, candidate B's position on some particular issue. But first of all, before any of these discussions are held, somebody in an office on the high floor of these organizations, they basically want an answer to one question: how much money will the campaign be spending in advertising with us? That's the first question they want answered. And they want that answered pretty early. remember back then when things were just beginning to percolate and people were wondering, my gosh, I mean, CNN is all but laying down on the tracks here. And they explained why. Journalists aren't determining where things are going here. And in the early stages of the Clinton campaign, journalists are not determining what gets covered and how often, and they're not calling those shots. The advertising department is. The legal department is. That's who is determining what gets covered, how often they get covered, and what they should be getting in return for this coverage. Leading up to the great debates that they've been having, they had, we talked about that. To illustrate the point that the preferred candidate has already been selected. The media has made a decision. They've made their own decisions as to who they want to see in office. That person or those persons will receive favorable coverage, especially since the expectation would be the quid pro quo would be, look, we're giving you sympathetic coverage. We're giving you favorable coverage. We're doing our best to let people know that you have so much to offer. You're the best candidate and you should win. That's what we are doing. Now, we know you have a budget of X numbers of billions or millions, not billions, but millions of dollars. Although, by the way, the presidential campaign this year, the advertising budget alone, it was estimated by experts, advertising experts, was expected to exceed $5 billion just this week alone. Donald Trump will unleash $10 million just this week alone in advertising in states where he figures he needs a little bit of help with exposure, because he's thinking that the exposure that the media generally are giving him is not very positive. So he is going to augment that and counter that with an advertising blitz of his own that's $10 million bucks, boom, 1 week. Hillary Clinton has already raised an additional $80 million, much of which will go into advertising. You see how it works. So people, innocently turn on their television sets and whatnot, and they're looking at the news, and all throughout the day, CNN is doing its thing, and MSNBC and Fox News and whatnot. And what they're getting is not based on the newsworthiness of the event or issue. What they're getting is the commitment of the news organization to supporting the candidate. They made that choice a long time ago, and they've gotten indications that it's a gamble that will pay off, because for the amount of favorable reporting that they've done, let's say on Hillary Clinton, she will be more inclined to spend money, more money, on advertising with whatever medium is deemed to have done a superlative job. This is how it works. So don't kid yourself that some deep decision-making is going on in the editorial or newsrooms of America. No. That's not how it's working. That's not how it has ever worked. How much money are you going to spend? We think this is pretty much how the conversation would go. We talked about that with in the case of CNN. Early on, when it was nonstop coverage of Donald Trump. He sneezes, it's news. He burps, it's news. And it was nonstop. And that was the first signal that you got that they didn't yet land a commitment from Donald Trump. And all of this coverage, this surfeit, this excess of coverage, was really the news organization making its points for later negotiation to say, look, we know you have a budget of $10. Okay, that's your budget. I'm speaking theoretically now. Your budget, your advertising budget in this election cycle is 10 bucks. Well, you haven't come to us. We have no idea how you're going to spend your 10 bucks, but we're here to discuss the fact that we think we have already given you at least $4 or $5 worth of in-kind exposure. We've had you on X number of shows for X number of minutes, a total of X number of hours in the last week. We have used your name X number of times in the course of a day. We have broadcast X number of images of you doing good things. They make all these arguments about ways in which they have already indicated to the candidate that they are inclined to give sympathetic coverage. And then they move in for the kill. And it would be, well, based on this, and this is how we compare to MSNBC. We gave you exposure, say, 20 times a day. They only did it 4 times a day. So you can't tell us now that you're not going to give us that you're not going to give us the money we want because we deserve it, and we have outdone the competition in terms of being of use to you and your campaign, and that's how they work out an arrangement about how much they're going to spend. Now Trump has been very problematic, and you can tell these things just by observing. He's been problematic for the media in this regard. And perhaps that in part is the reason that just about every couple of minutes there's a negative item about Donald Trump. Not that he doesn't deserve that kind of coverage, but it's that they have incentive to pile it on because the window of opportunity now to spend your advertising dollars, to spend that budget, the window is closing, and if people aren't seeing the money coming in, they're going to get revenge. Somehow, they're going to send a message that you better open up the purses and disburse what is in the purse, okay? So the coverage of Trump has been negative. Why? Because he's not spending that much money. And he's not spending money in the traditional way. His advertising dollars are going to non-mainstream media. So the mainstream people are really upset. What do you mean? We're expecting a lot of money to roll in. And early on, as we discussed here, early on, Trump trumped them, took every bit of free advertising you could get, didn't pay for it at all, and maximized the exposure for free that he got from these media organizations who were operating on the premise, the old-fashioned premise, that if we prove to you how useful we can be in terms of exposure and so forth, you would more than likely be kind to us as you divvy up your multi-million dollar advertising budget. So he proved, Donald Trump that is, he proved to be quite a surprise and still is quite a surprise. Now with Hillary Clinton, it's a whole different story. There is lots of money. And it couldn't have happened at a better time because she's in lots of trouble. And so she has to be helped. This is how the liberal, so-called liberal media, the mainstream media see it. She has to be helped because they had already determined that she deserves to win. But of course, you know, the small matter of divvying up that multi-million dollar budget that she definitely has. She has the money. Well, what are you going to do except genuflect before Mrs. Clinton to prove how worthy you are of the lion's share of her advertising budget? And that's why, at a time that we should be learning different kinds of things about the Clintons and their foundation, at a time that the media, the liberal media particularly, mainstream media, should be all over the story, we are finding that there are all kinds of ways that they're beginning to twist the focus. It's as if suddenly people can't tell what a story is, that the editors in the newsroom don't have a clue about what a story is. And when they tell these stories, even when it's bad, and it is bad, there is a very clear effort to minimize the impact, to minimize the negativity. Because, after all, it was agreed upon. She is the candidate. She is going to be the candidate. They want a part in creating this history. First woman president. By the way, they leave out the word white. They always do. It's implied. They don't want to put it in your face, but that's exactly what they mean. And they want to be part of this historical moment, and they want part of the glory of having made an extraordinary and historic choice as a news organization. So in one way or the other, they are contributing to what they see as the inevitable. All right? Except this, there's trouble with this candidate. This Clinton candidate is a very troublesome candidate to sell. Okay, they carried stories for a long time about, you know, how extraordinary she is, her great achievements. And truly, when you read these things, you go, where are they? Where are the great achievements? No great achievements here. Basic political stuff. Nothing extraordinary here. She's not an extraordinary woman, except in terms of ambition and the depths to which she would sink in order to achieve her goals. That makes her very extraordinary. But she comes loaded with negatives. And they know it. But there's that $80 million pot hanging over their heads, and suddenly they see less and less of the imperfections. These are small things. But the big picture is what they're after, and here America is at a historic moment. So they've twisted that story to that point where we are supposed to concentrate on the historicity of the moment. That's the change in the story, the slant in the story. We are in a very, very significant historical moment. And of course, the historical moment has to do with Hillary winning. That's the historical moment. That's it. And even though they're still trying to persuade the public that they're doing journalism, they actually are doing public relations work. And they volunteer to do that because, again, the calculation is that down the road it will pay off. They'll be part of the historic moment of returning America to its potential, its real potential. They would have been part of that. They also would have helped elect the first woman, white woman, president of the United States. Never mind the odors associated with all of this. They will clean it up as best they can in order to maintain some semblance of journalistic pride, I guess. But keep in mind, the person in question is in the middle, at the very epicenter of overlapping criminal investigations. And it is not that she's unused to this. This is par for the course. She has been here before, and she's managed, again, with a very friendly media coverage, to have survived previous ones. This one looks particularly troublesome because, you see, it's not just domestic. It's not just the U.S. looking into the Clinton Foundation. It is many governments around the world now. They're looking. They want to know what happened to the billions of dollars that they have donated to this foundation in the name of philanthropy and humanitarian effort that remain unaccounted for. And the results not yet reported and authenticated. So they have begun these kinds of probes in Norway, in Canada, in various countries. They're looking very closely at the Clintons, and they're not happy. They're not happy at all. But you see, the Clintons come out of Chicago, Chicago-style politics. And of course, with Bill Clinton in Arkansas-type politics, we don't need to go there yet. We talk about Hillary. Chicago-style politics, this is the norm. This is how they operate. It's gangster politics. You get what you want because you could get what you want. By any means necessary. And even though they know they're doing wrong, the fact is that there are so many of them in it together, it actually forms a kind of protective shield. Because if you're going to go after me, there are too many bodies that you will have to excavate, and it's going to really look bad. So this is how Chicago politics works. This is the whole thing. They are not that crazy. Richard Daley did a fantastic job of acclimating Chicago to corrupt politics. You have it in New York as well, but Chicago kind of has a special distinction in the area of corrupt politics. It's almost antithetical to say it in the same sentence. And that's what they come out of. So they, from the Clintons' point of view, they are merely proceeding with a political program that is fully conducive, fully compliant with their way of doing business. This is how they do business. They have a system. Remember, I talk about the importance of systems. They scientifically devised these systems to insulate themselves so that if you're going to take one down, it's a whole bunch of people who are going to go down. Recently, we saw that with the FBI director making the announcement that, yes, they did a very good job of pouring through the so-called missing emails that suddenly appeared under court order, and they had a chance to go through them, and he found some irregularities. In fact, he said he found that Hillary Clinton had been very careless, very, very careless, reckless, by having another server, her private server, on which she was sending and receiving messages that were classified. This is while she was Secretary of State, the nation's highest diplomatic job. Okay. I'll show you how the sleight of hand happens. First of all, there was no discussion in the media generally as to why is it that the FBI director has to handle a prosecutorial job. And why would the Department of Justice that should be handling this suddenly take second position to someone who is reporting to her? This is Loretta Lynch. And publicly state and affirm that she defers her authority to her second in command, and whatever he says, she'll go ahead with that. She will adopt that as her position as well. And true to form. True to form. James Comey said, well, we looked at this. We found several instances of reckless conduct in the handling of these emails, including the ones that were classified. But, he says, we did not find intent, and therefore we cannot proceed with the prosecution of the former Secretary of State. We didn't find intent here. Well, what do you know? Next, there was a news conference. And Loretta Lynch is announcing, well, she did say from the outset, just for to maintain transparency. It's a big word these days, transparency. This is after meeting Bill Clinton at an airport in a private plane, having a nice conversation with him in private while supposedly she was investigating his wife. She announces after James Comey's announcement that he found no intent that she did promise to adopt his recommendation. And since his recommendation was not to prosecute, because there was no basis for prosecuting, she also will adopt that as her position. Ta-da! See how it works? Okay. So we have that play. It's a typical Chicago corrupt politics. I ain't gonna do it. I know I should do it. And I know there's enough there to convict this woman, to indict and convict her, but I can't do it. It's a Chicago loyalty thing. So I'm going to give it to Mikey over here. Let him do it. And he comes back and says, well, I looked and I looked and I looked and we all looked and we spent so much time looking, lots of looking. And we can't find anything other than, you know, he was a little bit careless. But here's the problem. We did not see the media proceed with the logical question. Because that's part of their contribution. The law does not require you to prove intent. It's not required to prove intent. It requires only to establish gross negligence, which the man said it. He said it in broad daylight in front of a zillion microphones, carried live on all the mainstream media, but nobody asked the question, well, wait a minute. Is intent required here? Are you required to prove intent? She did not intend to do it. She was just careless in doing it. And guess what? Poof, in front of our very eyes, the woman escapes indictment with our permission. Nobody objected. No journalist went and said, hey, wait a minute. Are you actually required? First of all, why is the director of the FBI handling a prosecution Why can't the Justice Department handle this? And doesn't somebody know that intent is not required here? You establish only gross negligence occurred, and that's enough. That's what the law requires. So at the same time that Comey establishes for the world, it's like a sleight of hand done right before your eyes. At the same time, he acknowledges and affirms and confirms that the law was satisfied in his finding. His finding was based firmly within the law. He also gets away, and Hillary Clinton gets away with, well, you know, she didn't have intent. See how it's done? And it was sanctioned, and it was blessed, and it was adopted as the original position of not guilty. A new law, a new interpretation of the law was made right there in front of those microphones. But she walks. She walks. Now, what's happening, and the reason we're going to go through this as a setup for tomorrow, is that you have to understand that this particular moment that we're in involves many different people playing their respective parts. It is going to be very, very, very difficult, despite the evidence. It is going to be very difficult to have justice prevail. Hillary Clinton is protected by several layers of protection. And I'm going to come to one of the most important ones now. We talked about the media and their ongoing role in expunging Hillary and the Clinton Foundation and the Clintons from blame for anything. Not this year, when history demands that she go to the White House. And when the money backs that up in terms of advertising dollars. And when these institutions that say they are operating in the public interest are also so compromised. Because it's important to the owners and the people who make decisions within these institutions to have access. And they have already enjoyed that kind of access. So they're compromised. The thing is that the people who are doing the journalism here, and they're still missing the mark, is, I would say, what we call the conservative press. They're doing some good work. The mainstream media are busy acting as flacks, acting as hired guns to deflect any kind of blame associated with Hillary Clinton that might imperil the plan, of course, that might imperil her destiny to be in the White House. And this brings me, of course, to a major, major missing element, and that is Barack Obama. He is nowhere to be seen in all of this. Neither he nor his administration. The media is doing a great job of kind of severing things, severing ties, and isolating these events so that we don't see the big picture. But there, of course, is a big picture. This is Chicago politics, after all. And Chicago politics involves armies of people conspiring to do really bad things. Their protection is that they're all in it together. And it would take way too long to take them all down at the same time. But you can't tell me, you can't, just cannot tell me that the president had no idea whatsoever what he was getting in for when he brought Hillary Clinton. Of course, we know she didn't actually bring her into his administration. She landed there. She landed in his administration. It was a stick-up. Chicago style. This is what I want. Make sure I get it. The Clintons, in fact, had played a significant role in the emergence of Barack Obama as a national figure. Remember that speech at the Democratic National Convention in 2004, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and a very resilient and vibrant presence at the podium, riveted the nation. And he was on the rise. That was a Clinton issue. That was a Clinton plan. The Clintons were able to take responsibility for that, take the glory for that. We are bringing along a nice dark-skinned fellow with nice teeth. He's going to go somewhere one day. Not today. But someday he'll make his mark. But Chicago politics being what it is that young man, who I still will not forgive for destroying the life and profession and career of the Reverend Jeremiah Wright by castigating him publicly for doing nothing wrong. He's been very silent about Hillary Clinton. He has nothing to say. And nobody in his administration has anything to say about somebody who he brought in as his Secretary of State, gave her the highest diplomatic job. We still don't know how that happened. She was not at all qualified. She was not at all qualified for this job. But that was the gun to your head negotiation. She had succeeded with a gun to the heads of people. She was in the U.S. Senate. It was the consolation prize that she demanded and got for being supportive, the supportive wife of a sexual predator. I stuck by you, although she left the White House 2 years before he did, to establish her residency in New York State, where she would then proceed to represent the state as a New Yorker. All arranged, Chicago-style politics. No qualifications at all, in the sense that people would, if I said, hey, you know, I want to be the U.S. Senator from New York, my God, all kinds of questions about my qualifications and my experience and this and that. And Daniel Patrick Moynihan, who used to represent the state, the late Daniel Patrick Moynihan, it was understood that Hillary Clinton will be his successor. All those incredible black elected officials, they were trying to fight to see who could fall on the sword of loyalty first, to clear the path for Hillary. And wouldn't you know, she got it. She got it. Completely unqualified for the job. Got to the state just 2 years before she became its senator. So they're accustomed to the seedy kind of operation. But back to Obama. What did Obama know, and when did he know it? This is a question that ought to be asked right now. How could you appoint a Secretary of State with all of these horrible marks against her, all of these issues that should raise doubts about her character, that would ordinarily, it would have raised doubts about your character, Mr. President, if the situation was switched? A prudent president, with the assistance of all these investigative arms that you have available to you, you have the Justice Department, you have the IRS, you have the Homeland Security, you have all these different investigative departments. And you have a band of people whose only job is to, as they say, to vet a candidate. And nobody came back to you and said, you know what, Mr. President, I don't know that this is a good appointment. Oh, you couldn't wait. So either he was not told and he was completely blindsided by the succession of explosions about the shenanigans of the Clintons, or he didn't care, or he yielded to the gun put at his head. One way or the other, he played ball because she got what she wanted. And there has been no discussion about what this president knew about the candidate who would occupy the highest diplomatic position in his administration. I remember as soon as after she was appointed, and I think somewhere around 2009, 2010, when she started, she was appointed in 2009. But shortly after being appointed, Hillary Clinton is flying all over the world. And you can see from the coverage, she was being received as if she were president of the United States. I mean, color guard and all of this other kind of nonsense. And I asked then, why does this woman have to go to Tonga? Okay, you go to Tonga, you go to Malawi, you go wherever it is. Okay, fine. But we never get reports about what you did there and to what benefit was it to the United States. How do you account for this trip? Every time that official plane takes off, it's a couple of $100,000. You have the best plane and you have the best pilots, you have the best hotels, you have the best food, the best in transportation, bulletproof if you please. And you're living large, like a president. Because in fact, in your head, you are the president. And the president, the real president, allows you and indulges you this kind of what I would consider to be very imprudent behavior, very undiplomatic behavior. You don't have to account to anybody for anything. You file no reports. And at that time, I had said, we should keep in mind that the Clinton Foundation exists. And she is attached to the Clinton Foundation. Might there be a problem here in which at the U.S. government, taxpayer expense, this woman is conducting foundation business. She's transacting personal business at taxpayer expense and enjoying at the same time all the rights and privileges associated with being a representative of the government. And we see no attempt at all by the Obama administration to rein her in. So one could only assume that it passed muster. It was okay. When Hillary Clinton quit, I'd never seen this phenomenon before, but she went on a farewell tour. Which public servant, I don't care how high in an administration you're at, which public servant goes on a farewell tour, again, financed by the public? By then, of course, her sights were set on the White House. But traipsing around the country like a rock star, doing a farewell tour. You will remember how I almost exploded on this program when she appeared, I believe it was on ABC, with the president like her prop at her side. And she says, oh, this is my buddy. And he's there grinning and skinning. And I'm saying, this man must be on some kind of medication. He has lost his mind. Or people around him have lost their minds. But who in their right head would have your president of the United States running around doing a farewell tour with your employee, who then refers to you as her buddy? I was outraged about it. I couldn't imagine that anybody in their right mind would have allowed such a disgraceful thing to happen. But then, of course, this is Clinton. And it brings these things back to me. These things come back to me now as a basis for raising the question. What did Barack Obama know about the Clintons and their foundation and their operations? And when did he know it? What did he do about it? And I would go even so far as to say that I believe that part of the arrangement all this time was to give that extra lift of credibility. That's what he did. That was his part, his role, was to let her do whatever she wanted to do. You have a Department of State that by all investigations so far was in a state of chaos, doing its own thing. She was running her own foreign policy. Yeah, I wake up tomorrow and I think tomorrow will be a good day to invade such and such a place. Well, let's go kill Gaddafi. Let's bomb such and such a place. You know, this is what was going on. This is the deal that Barack Obama made with the devil. And he kept his word. Why do we not hear from Barack Obama what he considers to be his responsibility for creating this monster? Are you saying, Mr. President, you had no idea all of these resources, all of these investigative resources available to you? You had no idea that this was going on. You had no clue. Not your U.S. Attorney General. Not your Justice Department, not your FBI. Nobody knew anything. And this woman was just running her parallel government, doing whatever she wanted to do, she and her husband and her daughter, the Clinton clan, And you, as president, had no clue. You had no idea. And now that you have an idea, you have nothing to say. And the media appear to be fine with that. So that it is now a matter of Hillary Clinton versus the public perception. It's what it has boiled down to now is the public perception of Hillary Clinton. How do we solve a problem like Hillary? Huh? And more to the point, how do we help her out of this dilemma? So that's how they have changed the focus, and they continue to change the focus. It isn't whether she will quit or not quit, whether the Clinton Foundation should be shut down. It is that the Clinton Foundation for all these years has been running an illegal and corrupt enterprise. That's it. This is organized crime at a brand new level, at the highest levels of government. That's the question. The president, the current president of the United States, has been harboring and supporting criminal activity right under his nose with U.S. resources and in projects that imperiled the diplomatic and other related interests of the United States. That's a question, and that's a question that Barack Obama should answer. But he's getting away with it, too. Chicago-style politics. They've isolated the thing. They say, well, it's about Hillary. Yeah, there's just slight problems we're having with Hillary. But we already got the clearance. It was not intentional. Whatever she's done, there was no intent, even though that's not the question. The question is not about intent. You don't have to prove intent. You proved negligence, which is the charge. Now prosecute her for negligence. Edward Snowden was prosecuted. They were going after him. Negligence. Stealing secrets. Doing all kinds of things contrary to policy. So keep this in mind. We are being conditioned to accept a heavily revised rationale here, a heavily revised scenario, so as to avoid dealing with the central issues involved. And in my view, and I insist that this is my view, this is not about Hillary Clinton alone. They're focusing on Hillary Clinton, but it's really the Obama administration, the entire administration, and the president himself should be called into account. This is the person you chose. This is the person you brought in. This is the person whose actions directly impact on the credibility of this entire nation, and specifically on your administration. There's wrongdoing committed here. You cannot be silent about it. So what did you know? And when did you know it? And what have you done? That's my question. Thanks so much for joining me today. I thought we would do that. Tomorrow we return to the Clinton Foundation and other aspects that are coming to light. I'm telling you, this story is blowing up all over the world. And this program and this station have become a necessary reference point for people who have been looking at this, because Charles Ortel has been meticulous and encyclopedic in his annotation of this entire debacle. So tune in tomorrow for more information about how this entire thing, people are organized to pull wool over our eyes, including those people whose job, whose charge it is to tell us the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. They're in it too. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Meditations and Molotovs with Vincent Emanuele. I just love that. Name of that program. I love it. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Let me know what you think about this program. And as always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.